third episode blues. Had some sound array problems, changed microphones, had some hiss, cobbled it all together into something that I hope is listenable. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the first 10 pages. If this is your first time here, welcome. Also, you're probably wondering, why is it called the first 10 pages? Well, it's called the first 10 pages because in, like, the Hollywood studios, they want your script to be really good and it has to be great by like page 10. And if it's not, they're gonna throw it away. That's what they say, that you need to capture the eyes of a studio reader within 10 pages. And if you don't have them in 10 pages, they're out and you're out. Now, if we're being honest, it's probably much sooner than 10 pages. But that is the rule of thumb, 10 pages. So that's what we're going with. And that is why we focus on reading the script, which we're going to get to in just a moment. And then we discuss what's in that script, how it differs from the film, and why the script works. Or doesn't. But usually does. That's why we're covering it, because it does. All right. Now, a couple of things about the movie that we're watching. It's called Get Out. And if you haven't seen it, what are you even doing here? Like, pause this, go see Get Out. I don't even understand why you'd be here. It makes no sense. So this is... Anyway, so yeah. You should see Get Out, because I'm going to assume that you have. Get Out is a horror film written and directed by Jordan Peele. It stars Daniel Kaluuya, Allison Williams, Bradley Whitford, Caleb Landry Jones, Stephen Root, and indie darling Catherine Keener. If you care about his cinematography, it was Toby Oliver. Dude did a hell of a job. So yeah, let's give him a shout out. Music by Michael Abels, who also did a hell of a job. It was distributed by Universal Pictures and produced by Blumhouse, QC Entertainment, and Jordan Peele's own Monkey Paw Productions. It was released in 2017 in January and was a gigantic hit, in case you're not aware. All right, let's get to the script read. Script read is pretty straight for the most part, and then I start to have a little fun with it. And I hope you have fun listening to it. Okay, let's get to it. If you want to skip the script read, then just go to 1525. If you want to skip most of the script read and get to the part where it gets silly, go to 1027.
Get Out.
Written by Jordan Peele. On the next page, there's text at the top. There's no direction like title over or anything else, just the text, but I assume it's meant to appear on screen. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Romans 12, 1 and 2. Exterior, the Shaw's house. Front lawn, night. Perfect suburban house with bay windows and a front lawn. The Shaw family, Caucasian and warm, Richard, 34, Nancy, 30, Joshua, 6, and May, 4, eat dinner inside. Richard reads something on his tablet, illuminating his face. Joshua,
which one are we going to?
Richard, the one in Orlando. Nancy,
Disney World. Tony said that Mickey is not really Mickey. It's someone else in there.
Mickey's Mickey. Exterior, suburban street, night. Andre, 29, an African-American man, runs down the sidewalk and sweats. He listens to jazz on his phone. The music stops. He stops running and checks his phone. Andre, damn. He's right in front of the Shaw's house. He glances inside. The Shaws seem normal and content. Andre smiles. A motion-detecting security light floods the lawn. Interior, the Shaw's house, dining room, continuous. Richard looks up from his table to see Andre standing there. The rest of the family doesn't notice. Nancy tends to May, who squirms in her chair. Richard watches Andre protectively.
Also, Tony said he saw a Chef Mickey and a normal Mickey.
Nancy.
He must have changed his clothes for work.
Exterior, suburban street, continuous. Andre walks on. It's getting dark. He is suddenly very alone. A vintage cream-colored Porsche Boxster with tinted windows and a roof creeps up on the street behind Andre. It's following him. Interior, sports car, continuous. Driver's POV, watching Andre. His breath echoes, deep and tinny, as if it were into a coffee can. Through the car's system, we hear an English to French language tutorial recording. Tutorial.
Pardon me.
Where is the nearest restaurant?
Pardonnez-moi. Où est le restaurant le plus proche?
I have no idea if I said that, right? We're going to assume I didn't. The driver doesn't repeat. Exterior, suburban street, continuous.
André, feeling followed, stops to tie his shoe. The car also stops. André waves at the unseen driver. There is no response. The engine purrs. André begins walking again. The car begins slowly, too. André stops again. The car does, too. André peers through the windshield but can't see through the tint.
Can I help you?
No response.
I'm new to the area. I just moved here. Down on Evergreen?
Nothing.
Did I do something wrong, cause?
Interior, sports car continuous. Driver's POV. André continues to talk but isn't heard. Tutorial.
Can you show me the nearest bathroom?
Pouvez-vous me montrer la salle de bain la plus proche?
Exterior, suburban street, continuous. André hears nothing from inside. André, under his breath. This is some shit right here. André begins walking. The car creeps alongside him. After a few steps, André stops again. The car stops. André laughs.
Wait a minute. I know you? You messing with me, right? Come on.
No response. He realizes it's not a friend.
You know, this could be considered stalking and harassment. Plus, you're sitting in a deadly weapon, so that's some felony type shit right there.
No response.
What? Say something then.
No response. André can't hide his anger anymore. He starts walking the other direction. The car backs up, following André in reverse. André, to himself.
Calm down, André. Don't do it. Don't let him get to you.
After a few more steps.
Fuck.
André, fed up, stops. He approaches the passenger side window and bangs on it.
I'm from Brooklyn, man. If you want to do something, then let's do something. I'm ready. Hey, I'm talking to you.
Interior, sports car, continuous. Driver's POV. André bangs on the window. Exterior, suburban street, continuous. André bangs harder on the window 3 times. The car's passenger side window rolls down. Tutorial.
Can you help me find a hotel? Pouvez-vous m'aider à trouver mon hôtel?
André's expression goes from anger to terror. The driver wears a tubular metal medieval knight's helmet with slanted rectangular eye holes. André, shit. The driver raises a gun with a silencer on it. André turns to run, but is shot in the back. Stunned, André stumbles towards the Shaw's house. The driver exits the car and follows him. Tutorial from inside the car.
Can you please call the police? Pouvez-vous, s'il vous plaît, appeler la police?
Exterior, the Shaw's house. Front lawn, continuous. André falls in front of the Shaw's lawn. A dart sticks out of his back. He reaches towards the Shaw family. The masked driver approaches calmly. André drags himself toward the house as everything blurs around him. André, weakly,
help.
André passes out as the security light floods the lawn again. Interior, the Shaw's house, dining room, continuous. The Shaw family eats while André lays on their front lawn. This time Richard, buried in his tablet, doesn't notice. The driver lifts André's limp body and carries him to the car.
Tony said Mickey's face doesn't move.
That's right, Mickey's always happy. Exterior, suburban street, continuous. The driver carries André to the car. Joshua, off screen.
Why?
Because he hasn't aged in 100 years.
The driver plops André in the padded trunk. He gets in his car and drives off. Title card. Get out. Exterior. Brooklyn Park Slope. Dawn. Shouldn't that say Park Slope, Brooklyn? Anyway, the sun rises over the city. Autumn. Beautiful. Interior. Brooklyn Loft. Living room. Morning. We move slowly through the small but clean apartment. The walls are decorated with fascinating urban photography. Interior Brooklyn Loft bathroom, morning. Chris Washington, 26, a handsome African-American man, shuts the medicine cabinet. Period. He's shirtless and naturally athletic. He scrutinizes his reflection with a touch of vanity. Interior Starbucks counter, morning. Rose Armitage, 28, Caucasian, brunette with freckles. Cool and beautiful like an old summer camp crush. Rose looks at pastries through the glass. She can't help but smile. Interior, Brooklyn Loft, bathroom, morning. Chris spreads shaving cream onto his face and shaves. He postures a little, then nicks himself on the neck. He smirks. Deserved that.
Interior, Brooklyn loft, living room, morning. Chris, clothed, looks out his window through a professional camera. He flips through some striking urban images on the digital display, much like the ones framed around his apartment. He is a very talented photographer. Sid, a small black dog, watches him. The buzzer rings. Interior, Brooklyn building, hallway, morning. Chris opens the door. Rose stands outside the apartment with her hands full. She has two coffees and two bags of pastries. Chris smirks. Rose,
I couldn't decide.
Yes, that's the voice we're going with. He takes the coffee tray and pulls her inside. They kiss. Interior, Brooklyn loft, living room, morning. Rose and Chris have coffee and sweets by the window. The small mound of pastries sits on the coffee table. Sid lays on her lap. She strokes him. It's a perfect morning.
Poor thing. Do you even pet him?
Chris.
Are you kidding me? When you're not here...
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
I'm trying to decide if I should go with Kermit or Droopy.
When you're not here, that dog gets the best fucking pets of his life.
Yeah, I think we're going with Droopy.
So, how come whenever I come over, he acts like he's been totally neglected?
'Cause he knows he's got you wrapped around his little paw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Chris picks up her foot sweetly and massages it. She melts. Well, of course she does. She's got such a beautiful voice. Interior, Brooklyn loft, Chris's bedroom, day. Chris packs a small bag of luggage. Rose lays on the bed. Rose.
Toothbrush, deodorant.
Check, check.
Chris puts a cigarette in his mouth. Rose pops up and grabs the cigarette from his mouth and breaks it. Chris tries to feign incredulousness, but is amused.
I'm not gonna have one the whole weekend.
You quit, remember?
I'm nervous.
Why? They're going to love you.
Yeah? How do you know?
Let's see. You're smart, sweet, handsome, creative. You're you.
Good answer.
Chris packs in silence for a moment. I'm going to say it. Yeah. I'm getting to it. Okay. Okay, it's coming. All right. Okay, here it comes.
Do they know?
Almost got it. All right.
Do they know I'm black?
Rose is taken aback by the question.
I don't think so. Why should they?
Seems like you might give them a heads up.
Really? Like, Mom, Dad, my black boyfriend is coming up for the weekend?
You said I'm the first black guy you'd ever dated.
Yeah.
So this is uncharted territory for them.
Rose embraces him.
Baby, it's fine. My dad would legit vote for Obama a third time he could.
By the way, that's what it says, a third time he could. Might be a typo, but just in case it's not, I'm going to read it as it is on the page.
Yes, he will want to talk to you about it, and that will be embarrassing. But they're going to love you, I promise.
Chris nods. She kisses his neck and pulls him to the bed. Interior, Brooklyn loft, living room, day. Chris turns on the TV for Sid. He and Rose stand by the front door, about to leave.
Bye.
See you soon.
Rose blows Sid a kiss and they leave. Exterior, Brooklyn neighborhood street, day. Chris puts his luggage in the trunk and enters the passenger side of a shiny white BMW X5. Interior, Brooklyn neighborhood street, parked car, continuous. Rose sits in the driver's seat. Chris gets in the passenger seat. Her car is a mess.
How do they even let you in a hospital?
Shut up. I'm very sanitary at work.
She moves some fast food wrappers to the back seat.
You ready?
Yeah, you?
Oh, wait.
She raises her phone and takes a selfie of the two of them.
Ready?
Chris puts his hand on her leg and they drive off. Exterior, New York City, continuous. The car leaves the city. Exterior, rural road, bird's eye view, day. We soar over the car as it drives through the beautiful countryside, a road flanked by woods. Interior, Rose's car, day. Rose hums. Chris, in the passenger seat, looks through his camera at the passing trees. He snaps a test shot.
How long has it been?
10 months, so a year, basically. Longest I've ever been away.
Chris takes out another cigarette. Rose promptly grabs it and opens the window.
Whoa, come on. I'm a grown man. If a man says he wants a cigarette, a man should be able to.
She throws it out the window.
Okay, so that's like a dollar. You're basically just throwing dollars out the window.
You shouldn't have bought them.
I didn't buy them. Rod. Shit.
What?
I almost forgot Rod.
Exterior, LaGuardia Airport, outside the terminal, day. Rod Williams, 26, African-American, a stocky TSA agent, smokes a cigarette. His cell phone rings.
Sup?
And that's the end of page 10.
So, let's begin where we're supposed to begin. On page 1.
What was with that Bible quote? Am I right?
Okay, no, seriously. I don't really see why that Bible quote was there at all. If it's meant to be prescient of what's going to happen to our main character and the people he runs into who were transformed, it's not really adding anything. So I completely understand why this was excised. It doesn't work for me. It obviously didn't work for Peele at the end of the day. And then we get into the Shaw family. The Shaw family is very interesting. This I do understand the choice. I understand exactly what Peele was going for here. It was the happy-go-lucky, everything is fine for the white middle-class family, right? Everything is great. They're going to go to Disney World. There's a guy on their lawn who's calling for help in a few minutes. And, you know, their life is going to continue on unimpeded. I think that was the sort of underlying point of that whole sequence. But there's more to it. There's the whole conversation where the little boy is asking about Mickey Mouse and how it's not really Mickey Mouse in there. And there were two Mickey Mouses and all of that stuff. If you think about it, this might be the seeds of Us, which starts at an amusement park, if I'm remembering correctly. That idea of there's somebody else in there is carried over to that movie. This movie isn't about that. This movie has it as a plot device, but it's not the story. It's not even the theme. Obviously, there's themes of race and assumptions about liberalism. The characters played by Whitford and Keener, these are not your sort of right-wing, angry, racist stereotypes. These are left-wing, liberal, open-minded people, supposedly. It's a very different take on that. And having that whole conversation with the Shaw family about Disney and Mickey and all that stuff, it's very distracting, first of all. It's a little too light for a movie that's about to go into a sequence that is light between Rose and Chris. Opening it light, you never get the tension. There's never any tension set up this way. I mean, yeah, the guy is still kidnapped and taken off the street, but everything that leads up to it is sort of humorous or has a little, you know, wink to the audience throughout it. Even when it gets a little serious as Andre's nervousness ramps up, but it never really gets as tense as what's finally on screen. Even though the way this is being told is giving us hints, it's ham-fisted in my opinion. I like the way Peele ended up doing it, which is you don't need to set up every little tiny thing in the beginning. What you do need to set up is all the major stuff, and he does. And we'll talk about that, and I'm also going to talk about not just the highlights of what's being set up, but why, even though I'm pointing out things that may not have worked here, why this was the script that made Blumhouse Universal go, oh heck yeah, let's make this. Because I think there's a lot of reasons for that, and I'll get to that after I get through these 10 pages. So we get past the Shaw family, we get to the whole Andre scene is interesting. There's another version of the script that I have. My presumption is that it's an early draft because of the Shaw stuff, because of the interaction with the car and the language tutorial is handled and all of that stuff. There's so much more in there. It just seems like an earlier draft. But
in the other draft,
when Andre's walking down the street, we get the other side of the conversation. Instead of it just being Andre, we hear his girlfriend and she's giving him directions and telling him what street. So I kind of wonder if all of that was filmed and in the editing room, Peele and his editor took the other side of that conversation out. I find without it, it's much more engaging. You're much more engaged in what's happening because instead of just being a witness to a conversation, your mind is now working about what's happening on the other side of the conversation. Who is he talking to? You have to figure that out. Easy to figure out. Potentially, you assume it's a girlfriend, all those sorts of things, but your brain is engaged instead of just shut off and watching a movie.
And let's not discount the fact that it's just much spookier.
Let's go to that language tutorial. The language tutorial is interesting. Again, I get what's going on. It's two voices, two ideas from the same person. It's duality. It doesn't work. I knew that it was going to lead to a punchline. So the whole idea that it's just typical phrases, but that when the window goes down, it becomes a question that someone might actually be asking, the implication being that maybe he's lost. Can you help me find a hotel?
Andre
sees something that freaks him out, which turns out to be the knight's helmet that this person is wearing. Following one is, can you please call the police, as he's on the lawn.
And that's a punchline. And it's not a punchline that really works. It's not setting up the tension. It's something that undercuts the tension, much like talking about Mickey Mouse and Disney. Those things aren't working here, which is why they were cut. From there, we go to Brooklyn and we meet Rose and Chris. Most of that is the same. The changes there are much more minute. There's a lot less of Sid, the dog, in the final movie, which I think was a good choice because, again, distracting, unnecessary. The thing about him trying to quit smoking, which is important to the plot because that's the guise under which Catherine Keener's mother character has him sit down to hypnotize Chris later on in the movie. But we don't need to hit that twice. And it's hit in the apartment and in the car. In the final version of the movie, it's only in the car. And we only need it there. We don't see them sitting by the window eating their pastries. We don't need that. Saying goodbye to the dog. I don't think they do that. Chris doesn't preen into the mirror. There's a lot of stuff that differs. And again, it's all, in my opinion at this point, it all becomes about expediency. Let's get this story moving. Let's get it pushed ahead. Let's get into the good stuff. We get that they're in a good, strong relationship. We get that this is a couple that seems like they're in love. I don't know about you guys, but for me, after 10 pages, the moment she defends him to the officer when they're pulled over in the car, that's when I was like, oh, she's in on it. Because I felt the writer was trying too hard to convince us, look how much she loves her man. And so for me, that was the tip off. I don't know if there was one for you guys before that, but it'd be interesting to know. So let me know. In the script, one of the things that we get about her, I don't know if controlling him is the right word for it, but she's going through the checklist with him. She's telling him what he needs to bring, the toothbrush and whatever else she called, deodorant. Do you really need to call that out? And he doesn't know to take his own toothbrush and deodorant. I feel that the point of that was to show that she's the one in charge in the relationship. That's also why she's driving. She's driving the relationship. And maybe Chris wasn't aware that she's been in control the whole time and that this was all a setup. She's been dating him for however long, obviously a while, because she talks about having not been back home in the longest time yet, which means that this is the longest time it took her to draw somebody in and catch them in her web. So, you know, that's, again, that's all setting up what's happening. We get Chris's photography. In the script, Andre gets shot in the back with a dart gun. In the movie, Andre is grabbed and put in a headlock in a sleeper hold that puts him out. That sleeper hold comes up later on in the movie. That's the exact sleeper hold that the brother puts Chris in the climax. So we know for sure that that's who that was earlier on. I like that the tutorial was replaced with this 1939 song, I think it was, Run Rabbit Run. That was a really weird and interesting choice. It definitely adds to the eeriness of it. And I also think it speaks to themes about the hunter and the hunted, survival of the fittest. The song Run Rabbit Run, it's about a rabbit that's trying to get away from a farmer who's trying to have rabbit pie, if you listen to the lyrics. Run Rabbit Run, ruin the farmer's day. Don't let him get his pie. We are rooting for the rabbit here, which is Chris. We also, in the first 10 minutes, we get Rod, who's instrumental in the end of the movie. And of course, in those first 10 minutes, we get the sense of tone, the sense of horror, and the sense of humor of this film. To me, the best part of what ended up on screen is the sense of dread. I don't think that sense of dread is in this version of the script. Having that sense of dread set up so beautifully the way it is, with Andre on the street and being thrown into the trunk and Run Rabbit Run and all that stuff, is so important to get that there. And then to switch to the lighter tone of Rose and Chris, that becomes important too, because when we switch back to dread, it fits. It feels like, I was going to say the right turn, but I mean the correct turn. Whereas in this version of the script, if that happened, it is a right turn. It's a very sudden and very weird right turn. So now let's look at why this script worked. Why did Universal and Blumhouse go, yeah, man, let's do it? Well, there's a lot of reasons. The way Peel uses language to set up the world is really clever and new. We've reversed a certainly common stereotype from Hollywood for sure, which is the white people lost in the black neighborhood. Here's the black guy lost in the white neighborhood and concerned about his well-being because he's in this white neighborhood. which is a fantastic reversal, but also immediately gives you an idea that, guys, this is not going to be the horror movie you think it's going to be. We're going to be saying something here. This is not just about people getting switched out or whatever it is you might be expecting. We've got a point to make here, and we're going to make it. He tackles issues of race, both on the street with Andre, by the reversal, and in the conversation with Rose and Chris. Those are things that are new that we don't see very much of in other horror movies. We get Rose and Chris having the conversation, oh, my dad would have voted for Obama again if he could, and yes, he's going to talk to you about that. You know, that whole thing. Or, I'm sorry,
yes, he's going to talk to you about that.
That whole thing is also very new to a script.
This is a very different kind of couple that we've seen on screen, because they're not just a mixed couple. They're a mixed couple that are having an open, honest conversation about their obvious difference. Also, even though I feel that the lightness, the tone of it doesn't work, it's still cleverly written. It's just not working for what Peele was going for at the end of the day, as proven by the fact that it didn't make it to the screen. But that doesn't mean it's not clever. And I think the guys at Blumhouse and Universal all saw that and were like, oh yeah, okay, this is something, it's witty. It's different. It's going to make a comment about race in a way that we've probably not seen before. So already it is compelling. It is something that is new in the first 10 pages. Just very quickly, I was trying to think of some of the other horror movies that dealt with race. And the only ones I could really come up with without doing a Google were Candyman, Tales from the Hood, and The Blackening, which, of course, is comedy horror, but I thought was terrific. It was a favorite that year. And when I say the Candyman, I mean the original. I think the remake handled concepts of race better, but I don't think it was as good of a horror film as the original. And I think that's it. I think we've discussed everything there is to discuss about Get Out. Except for my French accent and my reading of French words. Pardon my French. Not so to speak, but literally, pardon my French.
Okay, well that's the end.
I hope you enjoyed my take on Get Out.
Thank you for hanging out, and I'll be back with another podcast eventually, soon, next month. We're doing it monthly right now. Hope to see you then.
Bye.
If you want to continue this conversation and follow me on the socials, I love talking movies, TV, and comic books at The Reality Comics on Blue Sky, which is like Twitter but not, and Instagram. That's both at The Reality Comics. Thank you so much for listening. See you at the table read. The First 10 Pages is written, hosted, and edited by Keith Planet. Music by Edison Carter. Any corrections, questions, or comments, please reach out via social media on Blue Sky or Instagram at The Reality Comics. The First 10 Pages, copyright 2025.